Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, six lines down. Gemara says, Hanami Amra Rabbi Yochanan Chadazimna. Rabbi Yochanan had already discussed this matter, this issue, sometime before. We saw yesterday a question that arose out of Rabbi Yochanan's statement, which is, does a katan yeshlo machshava or ain lo machshava? Does he have the capacity through machshava to impact on items? The example we brought was shchitat kodoshim, which require a kavanah. Does the katan have the capacity to generate that machshava, that kavanah that's needed for shchitat kodoshim? So here, Rashi and the Tosafot explain the Gemara slightly differently. Tosafot had the simple explanation, which is that with regards to a katan, a maaseh is definitive. If he takes action, and it's obvious through his action what his intent is, then we know what it is, and his action has bearing halachically. On the other hand, if he has it through machshava, or even through dibur, that has no bearing or no meaning whatsoever. And the Balei Tosafot add that even if he articulates what he's doing through his maaseh, if the maaseh doesn't create the obvious nature of what his intent is, his dibur, his articulation, makes no difference whatsoever. And then there's a third category, which is what the question turned out to be, which is machshavo nikeret mitoch maasav, a case where his action gives you a pretty good idea of what he's doing, but it's not absolutely certain. An example of that was a case where he took the animal in the Mikdash from the south to the north, and then he shechs it in the north. Did he move it from the south to the north because he knows that Kodshei Kodashim have to be shechted in the north? Or did he move it to the north because there wasn't enough room in the south, and he wanted more elbow room, he wanted more space to do his shechita? That we don't know. And even if he articulates for us what he meant to do, it still would not have bearing, because according to the Balei Tosafot, the articulation is meaningless. On the other hand, Rashi viewed the articulation as being an ancillary to the maaseh. So if he took an action and he articulated what the action was, if either through the action itself or his articulation of what he was doing, that gave us an obvious answer as to his intent, then that would work. So the combination of an action and a dibur for Rashi is meaningful, and that would be enough. On the other hand, dibur by itself or machshava by itself would not suffice. And then you have the question, which is machshavato nikeret mitoch ma'asav, a case where he doesn't articulate for us what he's doing, but he did it. So over here again, he moved the olah from the south to the north. For Rashi, had he told us that he was moving it from the south to the north, that would have been fine. We would have been done, because he articulated his intent. The combination of the two allow you then to know what he was doing. But the fact is, he didn't tell us. And therefore, it's a question mark, because it's not obvious through his action whether that's really his intent, or maybe there was an ulterior motive to why he moved it. It's a machshava that derives from his maaseh, but it's not muchach, number one, and number two, it lacks articulation. So in this case, we don't have that certainty that would have been brought about had he just told us what he was doing. As Rashi notes over here, because shchita lav maaseh muchach ala machshava, shchita is not obvious what he's doing for, shkola shchitot shavot, because any shchita is generic. So it's not clear what the particular shchita is for, because all shchitot look the same. And therefore, without any indication as to what the reason of the shchita is, it would not be clear just because you're doing shchita as to what your intent is. So that's where we left off yesterday. And the Gemara says here, Rabbi Yochanan already posed this question in a different scenario, or basically addressed the issue, which is, Tetznan, Hamaleh perutav legag mipnei aknima. Someone who took his fruits up onto the roof because of the pests, the worms, whatever was infesting that which he had. We know that if you put items like that out in the sun and the heat, it causes those pests, the worms, to leave the fruit because of the discomfort of the heat and the exposure to the sun. And then you have to make sure that they don't re-enter other fruits that are there. But in general, that's a way to rid yourself of those pests, is to spread them out on the roof. But yarad alehem tau, and then dew falls upon those fruits that are there. Here we're discussing what's called hechsher lekabel tuma, that ochel requires that it be first be washed or have water or a liquid, one of the seven liquids that goes across it, to wash it or cleanse it in a sense, in order for it to be primed to accept tuma. So the tau is one of those seven liquids. So here tau fell on the fruits. We have a principle the Gemara is going to mention here, which is ki tain and ki yutan. V'chiyutan mayim al zera v'nafal minivla tamalav tamehu lachem. The way that we pronounce it is yutan. On the other hand, the way that it's spelled in the Torah is itain. The difference between them being the active and passive form of the verb. And Chazal learned from that that even if the liquids end up on the food passively, as long as you're happy with that outcome or you want that outcome, then it's equivalent of you actively doing it. So the fact that it writes it as itain and it spells it, meaning that the nikudot make you pronounce it yutan, tells us this din that it has to be as if you actively placed it on, even though it happened passively. So over here, the tau fell on the fruits. Einan b'chiyutan. They're not classified as being mukshar the kabel tuma, because you had no intent for that. When you brought the fruits up there, you didn't intend for this tau. And after the fact, you weren't happy with it. As Rashi notes over here, there are two points in time where you could be impactful in terms of the extra the kabel tuma. When you put the fruits up there, you knew there was going to be dew, and you intended for that dew to come about. Or it was a scenario where you already, once the fruits were up there, saw the dew on it, and while the liquid is still on the fruits, you make a decision to say, I like it. I like what's happening over here. So either one of those two threshold points would allow you then to generate the kiyutan. But im nitkaven lekach, hare b'chuyutan. If you intended for that outcome, then there is kiyutan, because either you, before the fact, said, this is why I'm taking them up there, not just for getting rid of the pests, but also to have the dew fall on them. Or, if you, while the liquid or the towel is on them, you say, wow, this is really great, I'm so happy this happened, that would also be kiyutan. Otherwise, since it wasn't your intent, doesn't make a difference to you, then this liquid coming passively onto the fruits will have no impact on being machshir them the kabel tuma. That part of the Mishnah is not what's important to us. It's the second half of the Mishnah which is important to us, which is Heilum, Cheresh Shotev Katan. What happens if the fruits were taken and placed on the roof by any one of these individuals who have impaired capabilities with regards to Dat and Kavanah? Then, Afal Pish Nitkavnu Lekach, even though they intended for this outcome, meaning that they wanted the Tal to come upon the fruits, Einan B'chiyutan, it doesn't help. Mipnei Sheyesh Lehen Maseh Ve'en Lehen Machshava. This is exactly what we've discussed in the Mishnah in Kelim, and now we're seeing it in the Mishnah in Machshirim, which is that Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan have the capacity through Maaseh to indicate their intent, but through Machshava, they do not have the capacity to create intent or to create a Kavanah in these situations. This Mishnah tells us a similar thing. Rashi over here says that with regards to me, Afal Pishin Itkaven Lekach, even though they intended for this, is Lachar Shearad Hatal Alehem, after the Tal fell upon them. Rashi does something here specifically which Tosafot criticizes and says is a Dochak. For Tosafot, the explanation of this Mishnah is Chad V'Chalak. It's very easy. He says, you have an action here by a Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan. That action by the Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan is not definitive, meaning they took it up there to rid themselves of the pests that were inside the fruits. On the other hand, it had nothing to do with the tau. And there's nothing through their action that indicates that they want the tau. They might have articulated it, but according to Tosafot, articulation makes no difference. So that's why over here, their action has no bearing with regards to the tau. On the other hand, for Rashi, he has a problem, because Rashi believes that the articulation would make a difference. That means if they took it up there with the intent to have the tau fall in it, it would have worked for Ketanim, for Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan. So Rashi has to create the scenario that it was only after the fact, when the Tal was on there, then they stated their intent. Yeah, we like it up there. That is a standalone articulation, a standalone machshava, and that's why it doesn't work. But Rashi is forced to do that because of his opinion. Rashi's opinion is that articulation would have made a difference up front. So he has to say that it's only in the back end that this is true. Had they articulated up front, it would have worked. The Tosafot says that's a dochak. Where do you see in the Mishnah that they only articulated this after the fact? It seems in the Mishnah, no matter what they articulated, it wouldn't have made a difference. That's one of the reasons that compelled Tosafot to explain the Gemara differently. Now we have the qualification of Rabbi Yochanan, which is why the Gemara asked this question from Rabbi Yochanan. Lo shana shalo hefech behen. That's only true if they didn't go up there with a pitchfork and start to flip them over. If they start flipping them over, either to spread the dew around in them or to allow the other side to have dew fall on them, then it is a maisa, that's an action that indicates their intent. So over here as well, the maisa that indicates their intent, it shows you that Rabbi Yochanan has some sort of conclusive view with regards to this. The ma'asav mochichim, because his actions are definitive, afafi shelo peresh makshavato. He didn't articulate what he was doing. Nevertheless, hoven niker shedato lekach. So we know what his intent was. If it was a case where he articulated what he was going to do before his action, lo itzrich Rabbi Yochanan le'ashmininan. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't need to tell us this. That's Rashi the Shita though, who says that that case, we know for certain that that would work if he articulated it beforehand. So here's a case where the action, which is not absolutely certain, we don't know, just because they flip him over the pitchfork, it looks like they're doing it to spread the towel, and they're happy with the dew. You could argue it's to move them around so they get to dry in the top and that the worms would come out. We don't know exactly why he's doing it. It would be a pretty good guess he's doing it because of the towel, but still, it's still not mochiach. It's not absolutely certain. And yet you see Rabbi Yochanan says his maaseh is enough in that case. So now, the question is, why is Rabbi Yochanan posing a question to which he already has articulated an answer to, or has explained an answer to? So the Gemara answers that, hacha kami baile. This is Rabbi Yochanan's question. De oraita o de rabbanan? Meaning that from that case in Machshirim, I want to know now, is that a action that is determined to be effective halachically min haTorah? Or is this just the chashash de rabbanan and we go to the chumrah? The difference would be in a case of a kula, or in our case over here, where he moves the animal from the south to the north, do we say it's a good shchita? There would be the kula. If we believe that his action is efficacious in that case, then he would have halachic impact of being kavana, the same korban, shchitata korban. If that's the case, you have a kosher korban. But that's the kula. To say his action is valid in that situation, that's a kula to say that it would be effective. On the other hand, in our case here, by the fruits on the roof, when he goes and flips them over, it could be that we're saying, midoraita, he has a full-fledged action, and that's why it's hukshar the kabel tumah. Or it could be just midrabanan. They say the chumrah. Since we could consider his action to be an action, the chumrah would be koshesh for the fact that he did make it mukshar the kabel tumah. And we're saying now it will be mikabel tumah. But that's the chumrah, that's not the kula. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's question. Rabbi Yochanan says, I know that if he takes an action up on the roof, we consider that action to be efficacious halachically. But is that efficacious halachically midrabanan? And therefore it only applies in dinim, the chumrah, not the kula. Or is that an action that's valid even midoraita? If it's valid midoraita, then even in cases where it's the kula, we would apply it as well. Like the case of shchita ta'ola, where he moves it from the south to the north, do we consider his action to be a valid halachic action? And therefore his shchita would be a good shchita. So that's the nature of Rabbi Yochanan's question. It's built upon his understanding that a makshavato niker mitoch masav is effective halachically, because that he already declared here in the Mishnah and Machshirin in his qualification of that Mishnah. Now, the question that he's posing, that Rabbi Chir Abba says, Rabbi Yochanan asked this question, katan yesh lo makshava en lo makshava, was to understand how effective is that? Is it only effective mi de rabbanan? Is that effective mi de oraita? So that's the first version of this. Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak matnei hochi. On the other hand, Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak has an alternate girsa of the question of Rabbi Yochanan. I'm Rabbi Chir Baba. So it starts out the exact same way our Gemara started out on the previous Amud. It says, Bayi Rabbi Yochanan, Katan yesh lo maseh o ein lo maseh. So the question before was, does he have a makshava? He does not have a makshava. Over here the question is even more basic. Does he have a maseh or does he not have a maseh? So Amalei Rabbi Yami biti bayle makshava. Why is he only asking about maseh? Why doesn't he ask about makshava? Maishna makshava delo kami bayle. Why doesn't he ask about makshava? Because it's obvious from the Mishnah in Kelim that it's not ein lehem makshava. The Mishnah explicitly says they don't have makshava. Maseh nami loti bayilez. And why is maseh a question for him? That's not, because the same Mishnah says yesh lehem maseh. So why does he have one issue that he's asking about and assumes the other one, we know what the answer is. The only reason he knows an answer to the other one is because of the Mishnah and Kelim. The Mishnah and Kelim answers both questions, both the Machshava and the Maaseh question. So how can kami bailei? No, the question is it Doraita or Dirabanan? Is it a Din Doraita or a Din Dirabanan? Uposhit. And here's the answer to the question. Yeshle Maaseh v'afilu midoraita. If it's absolutely muchach, mitoch ma'asehem, what they're doing, their ma'aseh is a din doraito. That mina Torah, it's effective whatever they are doing. So for Rashi, that means, even if it's not absolutely obvious, but they articulate what they wanted to do, that's enough of a ma'aseh to be considered something effective midoraito. For the Baal Tosafot, it has to come out of the ma'aseh without any indication from them. No matter what they articulate, it makes no difference. It has to be obvious from their action exactly what their intent is. If that's the case, it works. Ein lehem machshava v'afilu midrabanan. Pure articulation, pure machshava is meaningless halachically, and that's even midrabanan, in that there is no effect or impact halachically on their machshava. We saw that at the end of the Mishnah in Kelim, where they simply pick up a shell that they want to use for scooping things up in the sandbox. We don't say that it makes it into a kli, because there they did no maaseh. They only had a machshava. They only intended to use it. Even if they do use it, their action's not meaningful there, because it's not doing any maaseh to the object. And therefore, it doesn't have a din of a kli. Machshavato nikeret mitoch maasav. That scenario, which was the question that we really asked, which is when your machshava comes out of his maaseh, for the Baal Tosafot, that means that it's pretty clear what he's doing through his action. But there is an alternative explanation that could detract from it being obvious or absolutely certain why he's doing this action. There, midoraita einlo, mina Torah, he does not have an effective action. Midrabanan, yeshlo. And here's the answer to Rabbi Yochanan's question. It is only midrabanan, which means we would say the chumrah, not the kula. So that means in the case of the knima, where the towel falls on it and he flips over the towel, over there it would be considered a huksha the kabel tumah, because there, it's the chumrah, and you're going to make it tameh. By the case of the shechita ta'ula, when he moves it from the south to the north, there's the other possibility that he was doing it just to get more room. And since it's not obvious from his action, his shechita is not an effective shechita over here. It's only a din d'rabbanan, that's the chumrah amma. And the way Rashi articulates it is, shelo amru chachamim divrehem lahakel mi divrei Torah. The chachamim, when they added on structures around the Torah, seyagim, fences to the Torah, they didn't come to be mekel on the Torah. Didn't imtzu'u okrim, because then they're going to undermine the Torah. Ela lahachmir v'lasot seyag. The whole point is to be more machmir and to create fences around the Torah. So the tzad chumrah, we're going to say it works. The tzad kula, we're going to say it doesn't work. Boimine Shmuel me Rav Huna. Shmuel asks of Rav Huna. This creates a whole tumult in the Baal Tosafot over here, because it makes it sound like Rav Huna was older than Shmuel. Shmuel's posing a question to Rav Huna. Rav Huna is a Talmud Mufak of Rav, so he would have been younger than Shmuel. And we find in other places that he's sitting in front of Shmuel and learning. So how could it be that Shmuel's asking his Talmud a question in Halacha? It wouldn't make so much sense to pose the question that way. The Baal Tosafot answer over here, like they do in many places in Shas and other situations, but also in this situation, they believe that there were two Rav Hunas. There was a Rav Huna who was in the transition generation between the Tanaim and Amoraim, older than Rav and Shmuel, and then there was a Rav Huna who was younger. And so you're speaking about two different Rav Hunas. And the one that the question is being posed to here is the older Rav Huna. Others suggest that that's not the case, but we find sometimes that a Rav will ask his Talmid a question, either lechadeda tatamid, in order to strengthen him, to test him, to sharpen his focus, and he'll ask the question. So it's not posed as a real halachic question, it's posed as a question to bring out the halachic concept. Or you can argue that maybe at some point Rav Huna had some information on this that Shmuel either had forgotten or didn't have a mesorah on, and he wanted to check if Rav Huna had heard from someone else, maybe even from Rav, this information, and therefore he's querying of Rav Huna. So if you do find instances like that, even though they're rare, you do have situations like that. The question was, minayin lemitasek v'kodoshim shehu pasul. How do you know that someone who's mitasek, means that he's playing around with kodoshim, that doesn't work? We just saw this Gemara at the end of Masechet Menachot, so it should be fresh in your mind. You should remember this. Rashi over here gives the examples of mitaseik. Rashi says, kagon, mitaseik b'sakin hagbio. What is an example of mitaseik? He's just picking up the knife, olazorko, or he's throwing it at the wall. He's throwing the darts at the wall. V'shachat b'kodoshim. And he ended up doing shkita. When he's pulling up the knife, he happened to go right through the throat of the animal when he was picking it up, and he shechted the animal. He's throwing it at the wall, cut the simanim on its way to the wall. Shelo nitzkaven l'shom shkita. He had no intent for shkita whatsoever. Aval nitzkaven l'shom shkita ba'alma kasher. If he did have intent for shkita, then it would be kasher. Ela shelo ala l'balim l'shem chuba. But it won't help for the balim l'shem chuba, meaning that you need intent over here. Since you don't have intent, it fails the kodeshim. So he has nothing, it's pasul de gamre. Had he at least had intent for shkita, then it would have at least cleared the threshold of being a kosher shkita, which made it a kosher korban, but it wouldn't have been ole lebalim, because he didn't wear nitzkaven to kodoshim. On the other hand, if you have intent for kodoshim and for the korban, then it would overcome both of those issues. So according to Rashi, it would only be in the shita of Rabbi Natan. That's why the question's in kodoshim and not in chulin. According to the Chachamim, the question could exist in chulin as well. The Bali of Tosafot disagree with Rashi and say, "Vikasha, v'chiyai gavna afilu b'chulin pasul l'rabbonon, afilu mitkavin l'chatzicha." He says, according to Rashi, according to the Rabbonon, this would be problematic because the Rabbonon believe that even if you intend for a cut and you do shechita, that's not good enough. So again, Rashi is saying this in the sheet of Rabbi Natan, who says that you don't need kavana l'shechita at all. You just need kavana l'chatzicha, to cut. As long as you're cutting, that's enough. Tosafot says, that's great, according to Rabbi Natan. But the Rabbanan don't agree with that. And the Rabbanan believe you need intent for cutting, not just cutting, but cutting of simanim. According to the Chachamim, the question could exist in Chulin as well. Although the Bayit Tosafot expressed the question in Kodoshim, even according to the Chachamim. And therefore, the Bayit Tosafot say over here, V'nir d'hai mitasek b'kodoshim anud mitkavin chatichat simanim. Mitasek over here is a case where he intends to cut the simanim, v'lo l'shem zbicha. That he doesn't do it the shame the shechita to be chulin kasher ubekodeshim pasul by chulin that would have been fine by bekodeshim it does not meet the grade because even though you intended for cutting you didn't intend for the shechita and so therefore he says according to the rabbanan even if you're mitkaven lechaticha it wouldn't have been enough the upgraded view in kodeshim was be even if you had intent for cutting of the simanim, which would have been good enough for chulin, that's still not good enough for kodoshim. So Tosafot elevates it an additional level of intent over here, and says that even if you intended to cut, according to Rabbanan, that wouldn't have been enough. According to Rashi, say, well, if you intended to cut, at least you'd get a kosher korban. Tosafot says, not according to the Rabbanan, according to Rabbanan, that wouldn't even do the job. You need to have at least intent for cutting simanim. Then you'd get a kosher korban, but it wouldn't even be ole lebalim, because in kodoshim you need the shame, zevach. Then he brings another case of mitasek. We old yesh mitasek acher kagon shel kodeshim shezavar hu chulin. He shechs the kodeshim thinking they're chulin. So he intends for shkita. He intends for shkita the simanim. He does everything right, but he just thinks it's chulin, and that is a failure in the kodeshim as well. And those are both cases of mitasek according to the Bali Tosafot. So those are your examples of mitasek. How do we know that it doesn't work by kodeshim? Shnemar shachat et ben abakar. We know already the topic, the subject of the parshia over there is ben abakar. So why does the Torah say again, v'shachat et ben abakar? What else are you going to be shechting? It already told you, you're speaking about a bakar. Shetei shchita l'shem ben bakar. That comes to teach you that the shchita has to be for the intended korban, for the intended bakar that is there. Amar lo zobi adenohi. That we already know, that you're not adding us any new information. Lakev minayin. I want to know, how do you know that this is me'akev? It's not simply that it's the mitzvah lichatchila, but even b'diavad it impacts. That he says, because amalei lirtzonchem tizbachu. So this is again what we saw at the end of Menachot. It should be brought lirtzonchem, lidatchem zvochu. It has to be with intent, it has to be with awareness that you're doing the zvicha, the shchita. And so there's a duplication of this requirement of intent. And we know by Kodoshim, if it's said once, it means mitzvah min amuvchar lechatchila. If it's said twice, it is mi'akev. So now we have two sources in the psukim for the fact that you have to have intent. One is, v'shachat ben abakar. The second one is, L'rtzonchem tizbachuhu. And the l'rtzonchem over here means not only willingly, but also willfully. That you have to bring it means l'dachem zvochu, that the shechita has to be done intentionally. And now you have a duplication of that same requirement, which means that it's me'akev, even b'diavad. Alright, next, Mishnah. Shechitat oveid kochavim nevela, umitama b'masa. The shechita of an oveid kochavim is completely ineffective. Therefore, it's the equivalent of the animal dying or being killed. And the resultant carcass is a nevela. It is mitama b'masa, which is the normal rule of a nevela. You can become tameh from a nevela either by maga, contact with it, or masa, carrying it. So, not only is it a nevela, it's a full-fledged nevela to the point where it conveys tuma the way that a nevela would convey tuma. So that is the shechita of an oveid kochavim. The question of oveid kochavim over here is, what oveid kochavim are we speaking about? So most Rishonim believe that the oveid kochavim we're speaking about here is any non-Jew. As long as they're a non-Jew, then their shechita is ineffective. That the Balei Tosafot already said back on Dav Gimel, and that comes from a Midrash Halacha that we see of Vezavachta Ve'achalta. You do Zvicha, and then you can eat it. Meaning that those that have the Tzivoy of Zvicha can generate an outcome that is Ra'uy L'Achila. And that would preclude any non-Jew from doing shechita because of the fact that they don't have the tzivoy of zvicha. So therefore they can't create an achila or a kosher achila after the fact. And so that is the source for the fact that any goy would be excluded from this situation. The other hand, the Rambam seems to associate this particularly with oveid ovedat kochavim, those that worship avodah zarah. The problem is that they're ovdei avodah zarah, and that's what's disqualifying over there, because we're worried about their intent, we're worried about their shechita in general. So that's what the Mishnah is saying, is that ovdei kochavim, in the real sense of an oved ovedat kochavim, is precluded from doing shechita, because of the pasuk that says, v'zavchu le'elohem, v'kara lecha v'achalto mizivcho, that there's a certain amount of camaraderie of eating together with them with regards to korbanot, and that's where the shechita is disqualified. But then he says, mi derabanan, any goy would be disqualified. But that only be a din derabanan. Mi doraita, it would seem like a non-Jew who's not an oved avodah zarah, according to the Rambam, would be able to do a kosher shechita. It just happens to be that he's disqualified mi derabanan. Although others want to suggest that even according to the Rambam, any goy shechita is problematic. It's just a question of whether it's mitameh kenevela or not, and that's influenced by oved avodah zarah. But in any case, it would be asur mi doraita. And of course, this is even with Yisrael Omed al Gavayim, if there's a mashkiach or someone standing over them, makes no difference. In this case, it is problematic. The shechita is inherently problematic. Gemara says now, nevela in isur hanalo. What you see from our Mishnah is that it is deemed to be a nevela. A nevela is something that is asur b'achila, conveys tuma, but is not asur b'hana. There's no exclusion or preclusion from getting benefit from a nevela. You're allowed to actually sell the nevela to a goy. You're allowed to give it to the animals to eat. You're able to get hana from a nevela. And that's what's being said over here as well. Mantano. Who's the author of such a position? Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, Jelo ki Rabbi Eliezer. We don't know who the Tana is, but we know for one thing for sure, it's not Rabbi Eliezer. And that is, because the Rabbi Eliezer, damar, stam machshevet oveid kochavim, lo vodat kochavim. He says the default scenario of a shechita of a non-Jew is la avodah zarah. And so now, if it's takrovet avodah zarah, then we're speaking about something that's not only asur b'achila, that's something that's asur b'hana'a. So he says that the default of any non-Jew that's shechting is the avodah zarah. If that's the case, then he can't be the author of our Mishnah, because over here we have a case where we deem it to be a nevela and not to be takrovet avodat kochavim. Rabbi Ami Amar, hachigtani. This is what's meant in the Mishnah. Now, according to Rashi, Rabbi Ami lo polega de Rabbi Chia, he does not reject Rabbi Chia. Tevadai matnitin deloka Rabbi Eliezer. For sure, our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer. He's just bringing an alternate view of how to explain the Mishnah, even though he agrees principally with that which Rabbi Chia already suggested, that it's not Rabbi Eliezer who's the author of the Mishnah. Now then, if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, in the beginning of the Amud Bet, he says, V'lo kasha l'Rabbi Eliezer. This explanation would make it that even Rabbi Eliezer could be the author of our Mishnah. So it's a machlok between Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom whether this changes our view as to whether Rabbi Eliezer can be the author of the Mishnah or not. So Rabbi Abi Amar Hochitani, Shchitat Oved Kochavim Nevela. That the Shchitam and Oved Avodah Zarah is a Nevela, which is what our Mishnah says. You are medayik out of that, that means that it's Osur Ba'achila, it's Mitama, but it's not Osur Ba'ana. Don't make that. This is the deal you should make. Had min la avodat kochavim. If it was a min that did it avodat kochavim, then it would be problematic and even asur bahana'a. Now a min is a person who is what we call aduk. He's very attached to avodah zarah. He is someone who closely worships avodah zarah, and this is a person who is really involved and engaged in avodah zarah. It's not simply that he shows up every once in a while, does some ceremonies and part of the ceremonies. This is a person who is actively involved, is dedicated to the avodah zarah. Now Rashi says over here that it's a case of Yisrael, shchidat min of Yisrael, and then he says kol shekein doved kochavim. Certainly, if it was a non-Jew who was a min, it would be true. But here we're even speaking about a Jew who has become a duk l'avodah zarah. You'll see in the bright that we're about to bring why that is obvious that it must be a Jew that we're speaking about. So now the Gemara says, Tana Nina had the Tana Rabbanan. Our mission now becomes supportive of this brighta. Shchitat min. The shchit of a min, again, this is a Jew who is a duk l'avodah zarah. And koshekein and oved kochavim, that's a min. La'avodat kochavim. We assume that the intent of a shchit of a min is to avodah zarah. That would make it then into takrovet avodah zarah. Not only would be asur b'achila, but also asur b'ana. Pito pat kuti. His bread as the din of a pot of kutim. Now, pat kuti, again here you have to know whether the girsa was changed in the Gemara, or meaning pat kuti is literally pat kuti. The way that the Baal HaTos Tosafot assume here is that the pat kuti is significant because the Gemara says, Mikan amru, kol ochel pat kuti, kilo ochel basar chazir. Anybody eats the bread from a kuti is the equivalent of eating basar chazir. The problem you have is that we know that with regards to pat akum, that first of all, we have dispensations to allow you to eat pat akum. That's in a case where there's no pat yisrael available. Plus, it's pat plater, which means that it's made commercially and not privately. So there are dispensations to eat non-Jewish pot. That's number one. How can you say over here, pat kuti is like ochel basar chazir? That's one. Number two is the Baal HaTos Tosafot themselves are of a belief that that pat yisrael, or the issue of pat akum, was also retracted at the time that they pulled back the din of Shemen. And so they believe that there is no din of Pat Yisrael today at all, whatsoever. Yet over here you're speaking about Pito Pat Kuti. Ramban suggests that simply it's an issue that the Jews were closer socially to the Kutim, and therefore they enforced it, or they made it much more extreme. And so it was an enhanced form of Pat Akum. Whereas the Baal HaTos Tosafot think that it is a separate, earlier Gzeirah, that had nothing to do with pat akum, but was directed at the kutim. And here Tosafot says it was a penalty or a fine for their difficulties that they caused Ezra or Zerubbabel. It's topical. It's the last day of Chanukah. We just read in the Haftorah of Chanukah, Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, who's the main mover. He is the political leadership of the Jews returning, and the whole siman of the menorah is to tell him that lo b'koach v'lo b'chayo, it's not going to be your strength that's going to do it, but Elokim b'ruchi amar Hashem, but through my ruach Hashem says, meaning that Zerubbabel is guided by that, and that's the story of Chanukah, that the menorah represents the guidance of Hashem, and that Hashem is directing things. So Zerubbabel, Shealtiel, and Ezra, when they came back, the kutim gave them a very hard time in rebuilding the Mikdash. They write letters trying to stop it, and they try to intervene to stop the building of the Mikdash. As a penalty for that, they made their pat kuti, and that's even different than pat akum. It's pat kuti, it's kebasar chazir. And that's what it's saying here. Pito, amin, lavod zara, his pat has the din like pat kuti. Yeno, yayin nesech. His wine is assumed to be wine of libations. It doesn't have a din of stam yenam, it has a din of yayin nesech. Sfarav, sifrei kosmim, his holy books. If he wrote anything that was stam, we assume that it needs to be yisareth. It has to be burnt, because whatever he did was l'shem avodah zarah, not l'shem Hashem. Peirotav tfalim. And any peirot that he has, we assume are tevel, because he does not mafrish properly. Either he does the l'shem of Avodah Zarah, he doesn't do it at all. This is how you know we're speaking about a Jew over here, because peirot tevelim is only relevant by a Jew. So therefore, when it says over here that it was a min, that's why Rashi says it was a min Yisrael, not a min oved kuchavim. Otherwise, perotav tfalim wouldn't be meaningful. V'yesh omrim, af banav mamzerim. His children are mamzerim. That's as Rashi says over here, because enu makpir al ishto. In Avodah Zarah, part of the practices of Avodah Zarah involved the releasing of one's wife, to whether it was the Kohanim of Avodah Zarah, to the participants of the Avodah Zarah. Znut was an integral part. You see that in the Nevi'im all the time, that whenever they're speaking about Avodah Zarah, they also speak about Zona or Znut that's associated with it. It became a part of the ceremonial aspects of the Avodah Zarah, or maybe even a way to permit these types of orgies or adultery to take place. But that's why we assume that he's a duk to Avodah Zarah, he's also a participant in this aspect of it, and therefore his children may not even be his own children. The Tanakama, Ishto lo mafkir. He might be stuck to Avodah Zarah, but that's a little bit too far. He's not going to give up his wife to the Avodah Zarah, even though these cults involved that process. And even in the modern era, with regards to some of the cults that took place in America, you see this idea that the wives or something were given into the cult, and that the cult leader was able to sleep with all the women. I mean, that's a concept in these cults or Avodah Zarah, but some people don't do that. They won't allow it. No matter how a duk there, but that's a red line that they won't cross, and that's what the Tanakhama believes. So, Amamar, Shchita Dovei Kuchavim Nivela, Benichush Shema Minhu. So then, okay, now you've explained the Mishnah in a way which says, that which is in the Mishnah, that's Dovei Kuchavim. Min, Dovei Kuchavim, he has a different din. So now, why don't we worry about the fact that the guy who's doing the Shchita in the Mishnah, the Dovei Kuchavim, maybe he's a min. How do you know he's not a min? So Amrav Nachman of Rav Avua, Eminim Beumot Ovdei Kochavim. There's no such thing as a min amongst the Ovdei Kochavim. Where it says, Vahaka Chazina Deika, what do you mean? We see that there are minim. So what are you talking about? There's no minim. Ema, Ein Wov Ovdei Kochavim Minim. Majority of those that worship Avodah Zarah are not real Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They're not a dupe to the Avodah Zarah. They participate because they think that that's their religion, or that's what they need to do a couple of times a year to take care of things, but they're not really dedicated to the Avodah Zarah. Savrala ki adama rabchir ba'abo amar Rabbi Yochanan. He holds like rabchir ba'abo amar Rabbi Yochanan, nochrim shebechutz laretz laved ovdei ovadat kochavimein. They really don't worship Avodah Zarah. Ela minag avutehem biyadehem. So I got a little play on what the Gemara says in Beitzah, that those that are in Chutz La'aretz, why do they keep 2 days of Yom Tov, even though we're Biki and Bikviya Diarcha? Minag avutehem biyadehem. They keep the ways of their forefathers. So just like their forefathers kept 2 days, so do we keep 2 days. So that's a, it's like a little play on that too. Here, those that are in Chutz La'aretz, they're not really a dukim to Avodah Zarah, but because that's what their parents did, that's what they do also. They don't really have a clear theological, philosophical reason to worship the Avodah Zarah. That's just, they grew up this way, and so they do it. They practice whatever they were told to do. They don't really think about it. They're not really engaged in it. They're not dedicated to it. So that teaches you that there isn't this concept of minim in Chutz La'aretz. Now, Bali Tosfot say, Nochrim Shechutz La'aretz Lav Oved Uvdak Kochim Heim Hilkach. Therefore, Be'eretz Yisrael Nami, it reflects on those that are in Eretz Yisrael. First of all, it's very interesting. It shows you that the elevated spiritual state of Eretz Yisrael has an impact not only on the positive side, but also on the negative side. Meaning those that are in Chutz La'aretz practice Avodah Zarah because that's their Mesorah. In Eretz Yisrael, when they're practicing Avodah Zarah, that's because they really believe in it. And that means that the spiritual elevation of Israel has negative impacts as well. There's a drive to spirituality. That drive can manifest in Oved Kochavim. It can manifest in better Yiddishkeit, the person who's a stronger Jew. But that means that it is impactful in Eretz Yisrael. But Tosfot says, the dilution in Chutz La'aretz indicates that even in Eretz Yisrael, it's not as strong as it used to be, which means that if in Chutz La'aretz it's all considered to be minag avotein biyadim, in Eretz Yisrael we'll consider most of the people just to be, yes, okay, they do it, whatever it is. There'll be a couple, there'll be a minority that are adukim avodah zarah. But we're not going to then say everybody is aduk avodah zarah, because in Chutz La'aretz they're not even doing avodah zarah anymore. So then in Eretz Yisrael, whatever they're doing is kind of half-hearted. It's not real. And so the min, or someone who's dedicated to Avodah Zarah, is going to be a rarer find, even inside of Eretz Yisrael. The Rishonim apply this to differing degrees as to how much we say this. Do we say still what they do is Avodah Zarah? But if we have a stam, a default situation, we're not going to assume that it's Avodah Zarah. Or do we take it much more literally? And therefore it has impact on things like stam yeinam, that maybe it should not be asur ba'ana. Masal matanim yahem lifnei edehem. Does that have application anymore? Maybe that shouldn't be an issue at all. Or maybe you go as far as to say that they're not considered to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, and the Rabbeinu Tam has the biggest chiddush, which is that he allows you to force a goy to take a shvuah, even though he's going to take the shvuah to shame the Avodah Zarah, because again, he doesn't feel like it's really Ovid Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's not a problem of a mehaveh, you creating a problem of Avodah Zarah through your demand for a shvuah. And others like the Rabbeinu Gershom even indicate that one can wear the clothes of a Komer, Avodah Zarah, because it's not considered to be as if those are the clothes or Takrovet Avodah Zarah. So to differing degrees or extents, the application of this principle differs amongst the Rishonim as to how far they're willing to take this position. All right. Rav Yosef Bar Yumi, Rav Nachman, Eim Minin B'Umot Ovdei Chachavim. So now we have a separate statement from Rav Nachman that says there are no such things as Minim amongst the non-Jews. So this, in addition to what we said before, which is that we don't think that Rov Ovdei Avodah Zarah are Minin, here it says, even if they are a Min, they don't have a classification as a Min. Lemai. And the question is, what halachic ramification is he adding over here? Ilema l'shchita, if you speak about shchita, hashta shchitat Min di Yisrael, amart asira, dobi kuchavim miboi. If you tell me that a Min, a Jewish Min, his shchita is asur, it's not qualified, and it's considered to be like takrovet Avodah Zarah, then why do you have to tell me that a non-Jew? If a Jew that's a min is so attached to Avodah Zarah, then certainly a goy who is a min will be even more so dedicated, passionate about his Avodah Zarah. Tosfot says, maybe not. How do you know that's true? Sometimes when you have an apostate, someone who leaves their religion and goes to Avodah Zarah, they're more dedicated to it. Tosfot says, "Yesh lamar v'dibhom akom min obeid kochavim ta'aduk v'odar kochim yoter pashut shchitato l'vodar kochavim min Yisrael." Says, okay, that might be true in general. So if you have a min Yisrael and a regular obeid kochavim, you could argue that the min Yisrael is on a more problematic level. But if you're talking about a min obeid kochavim versus a min Yisrael, then he's already passionate. You can't say that the Min Yisrael is going to have one din and the Min Ovei Kochavim is going to have a different din. They're both dedicated. They're both passionate to their Avodah Zarah. That's enough to say that it's disqualified. If that's the case, I don't need you, Rav Nachman, to come and teach me this din. Ela the Mori Din. Maybe it's the din of Mori Din that we saw in Avodah Zarah, which is the different categories of individuals who are problematic. Some of them we say that if they fall into a pit, you gotta save them, you gotta try to help them out. There's some where we say that if they fall into the pit, we're not gonna help them out, but you don't push them into the pit. And then there's some people that we would even condone actively pushing them into the pit. So there's a brightot in Avodah Zarah that discussed that hierarchy of who we dislike so much that you push them into the pit, who we wouldn't save, but we wouldn't actively do it, meaning we passively allow them to pass away, or someone that we would actually save. So over there, min is included in some of those that are moridin. So that's it. Hashtad Yisrael, if he's a min Yisrael, moridin, we allow you to actively push him into the pit. Dovde kochavim ibai, then min ovei kochavim, what's the question? If you allow it by Yisrael, so we allow it by an ovei kochavim. So that can't be what Rav Nachman's coming to teach us. Amar avukvar barchamo, the kabel mehen korban. The halacha that Rav Nachman's coming to teach us is about accepting korbanot from them. Now, D'tanya, we have a braita. Rashi here has a little piece about why, if we have an explicit braita, a Tanaic work that tells us this information, what was Rav Nachman adding for us? Rav Nachman says there's a braita. Rashi says yes. He says that when it comes to a Mishnah, then all the Amoraim would assume you know the Mishnah, and then saying something that is identical to a Mishnah is Lamai Hilchata. What are you doing? We don't need your statement, and you'd have to clarify why you added a Chiddush. On the other hand, if you say something that's also found in a Braita, and I would say maybe even a Braita that's less commonly found, Maybe not a brayta of Rabbi Hoshea and Rabbi Chiya, the Talmidim of Rabbi, put those brayta together, because those were brayta that were well-versed in the Beit Midrash. So that seems to be more of a less known brayta. Rashi says that by brayta, if an Amora says something and we find it in a brayta, we say, well, the brayta is a support for that Amora. We don't say, why did he say it if Eretan already said it? We say that he's telling us the din of the brayta, because not everybody knows the brayta. And that's similarly over here. The Tanya, and again, we just saw this back on Daf Hey, Mikem velo kulchem. So in the pasuk in the beginning of Vayikra, it says, Adam ki akriv mikem korban la'ashem. So that's speaking about the korban ulah. And there it says, mikem. When you bring a korban, it says mikem. Mikem, the mem, is from amongst you. Velo kulchem, not all of you. Lotzi et mumar. That tells you that a mumar cannot bring a korban. Mikem bachem. That's only true amongst you. Chalakti velo ovdei kochavim. But not amongst the non-Jews. We saw this back on Daf Hey. That by Jews, we distinguish between someone who is okay to bring a korban, and someone who's a mumar, who's not allowed to bring a korban. By non-Jews, we make no such distinction, and any non-Jew can bring a korban, seemingly even someone who is a oved avodah zarah. Mimai, how do you know that that distinction exists? First of all, Jew, we distinguish, we are mechalek, and by a non-Jew, we are not mechalek. Dilma achi kamar, maybe this is what's meant in the pasuk. Mi Yisrael b'tzadikei kabel. That from Jews that are tzaddikim, that do the right thing, accept a korban. Mirishie, those that don't do, those that are a mumarim, lo tikabel, do not accept it. Remember the Gemara back on Daf Hey said a mumar here is a mumar l'chol haTorah kula. It's not just mumar l'davar echad, it's mumar l'chol haTorah kula. Which would include a mumar l'avodah zarah, or a mumar l'chalel Shabbat v'farhesia, as the Brayta noted before. All of those are in this category of individuals who we would not accept a korban from. But then, aval bo'ir kochavim, klal uklal lo. By non-Jews, we wouldn't accept it whatsoever. You medayek that we accept by some Jews, not by other Jews. And then by a goy, we accept from everyone. Why don't you say, from Jews, we accept from those that are good, and those that are bad, we don't accept, and obi kochavim, we don't accept whatsoever. So Mara says, lo, sakadatcho, you wouldn't have thought this, the Tanya. Because you have the word ish, that is found in the pasuk in Parshat Emor. Veberel Aron v'Almana v'Kol Bnei Yisrael v'Amarta Lehem Ish Ish mi Beit Yisrael min Ager b'Yisrael asher yakriv kurbano l'chol nidreihem l'chol nidvotam asher yakrivu l'Hashem le'ola. Ish Ish is used in the pasuk, and the Brayta wants to know, why is there a duplication of the word Ish in the pasuk? Ma Talmud Lomar Ish Ish, why does it say it twice? There are both oved kochavim shenodrim nidarim v'nidavot ki Yisrael, because they are allowed to bring korbanot like a Jew. I mean, you have a ribui. They have a ribui in the puzzle that says ish ish. That teaches you that non-Jews can bring korbanot. So that's a given already, that non-Jews can bring a korban. So therefore, if you're going to make a distinction that says by Jews we make a distinction, by non-Jews we don't make a distinction, there's only one option. When you don't make a distinction by non-Jews, it means that everybody can bring it, because that's a given. We know that non-Jews are allowed to bring korbanot. Now, Abaye Tosafot say, why do you need ish ish to teach you that? The Pasuk itself there by the Din of Minwim says, a person may not bring a korban that has a mum in it. It says, umiyad bein nagchar lo takrivu et eleh. From a non-Jew, you may not bring any of these. Any of these would be any of these things with mumim. The diuk you would have made out of the Pasuk is, hatzmimim y takrivu. If they were tamim, you would be able to bring them. And that would already be an indication that a non-Jew could bring a korban. It says, v'yesh lomar, tololam tanimim lamilo. That tamimim also you would not be able to bring. V'atakra b'bali mumim, v'avor lehem b'lav v'ase. And it just comes to teach you that if a non-Jew brought a mum, not only would it be a problem to bring the korban in general, there'd be a separate issue of bringing a baal mum as well. So there'd be an Isser Asay and a Lav involved. But not to think that that would be a deal to teach you that a Goy is allowed to bring a Korban. Others, like the Ramban, suggest that the difference is, before we would have thought you could only bring Korbanot Chova, like a Chatat and a Nasham. That's what a Goy could bring, if you only had that Pasuk. Along comes the Pasuk of Ish Ish, to tell you that they're only allowed to bring Nidarim and Nidavot, and not Korbanot Chova. And that's why you need Ish Ish, to tell you what type of korban they can bring, because otherwise you would have just assumed that obligatory korbanot are what they can bring. Voluntary korbanot, they don't have any right to bring. The Ish Ish comes to teach you that it's just the opposite. voluntary korbanot they can bring, obligatory korbanot they cannot bring. So that's the solution to the puzzle here, which teaches you that since Ovdei Kochavim have a right to bring korbanot, and we know they're distinct from Yisrael, by Yisrael we differentiated between a mumar and a non-mumar, a tzaddik and a rasha. That distinction, that difference only exists by Yisrael. We're indifferent by the case of a goy, and therefore any goy, including a min, including someone who's Oved Oved Zara, he can bring a korban. As long as it's brought by Hashem and we control that because we bring the korban out, then it's not a problem for a non-Jew to bring a korban. Umetama b'masa. The Mishnah says that it creates tumat masa. It says pshita. Kevan the nevelahi mitama b'masa. That is a pol yotze. That is a derivative of the fact if it's a nevela, it's automatically mitama b'masa. What's the Mishnah have to tell us it's mitama b'masa? Just say it's a nevela. So the Gemara says, Amarav achitani, zo mitama b'masa, ve'eshlecha acheret, shehi mitama afilu b'ohel. Comes to teach you that this has a din of nevela, and it's mitama b'masa. But we have a different problem where it's mitama afilu b'ohel, meaning it has din of tumat amet, not just of tumat nevela, ve'ezuzo. What is that? Takrovet avodat kochavim. That's something that is brought or offered towards the Avodah Zarah. It's used in the service of the Avodah Zarah. Uche Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, and following the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, which we'll bump into in a minute. Igadamri, there's another version of this, what the deal is. Amarava achitani, this is what it means. Zo mitama b'masa, this is mitama b'masa, v'yesh lecha acheret shehi kazo. And there's another one that's like this, she mitama b'masa, that also is mitama b'masa, veinu mitama b'oel, and does not have tumat olo, v'yesh zo, Tokrovet avodat kochavim. That's Tokrovet avodat zarah. Ukadolok Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira. That's not like Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira. I mean, the deal would be the fact that it says shchitat avodat kochavim nevela. It could have stopped there. Then it says umitama b'masa. Umitama b'masa means that there's something else that's mitama b'masa. We have nevela from shchitat avodat kochavim. What's the thing that's mitama b'masa? That's speaking about Tokrovet avodat zarah. That's the second view of Rava. The first view is that it says Nevelah Mitama B'Masa, telling you that this is Mitama B'Masa, but there's something else that's not Mitama B'Masa that has more Tuma involved with it. What is this Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira? Tanya, we saw this in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira Omer, Minayin L'Takrovet Avodat Kochavim Shi Mitama B'Oil. How do you know things that are used in the service of Avodah Zarah have a din of Tumat Hamet, and therefore they're mitame ba'ohel, which is a unique aspect of tumat amet and tumat negayim. How do we know it also applies to takrovet avodah zarah? Shenemar, in Perech Kuvav and Tfilim, which is one of the Perekim and Tehillim that gives the history of the Jews, over there it says, Vayitzamdu leval peor, veyuchlu zivchei meitim, that they attached themselves to Baal Peor, meaning they bowed down to Baal Peor, and they ate from zivchei meitim. They ate from the dead korbanot, meaning that they brought sacrifices of the dead. Something that would be a negative connotation about the sacrifices, meaning that's the sacrifices to Avodah Zarah, are called sacrifices to the dead or of the dead. Ma meit mitamei bo'el. And there's a parallel created here. Just like meit is mitamei o'el, af takrovet avodat kochavim mitama bo'el. It also is mitama bo'el. Now, as the Bali Tosfot point out over here, it's a very long Bali Tosfot, but they prove the fact that the Chachamim don't disagree with this review of the Ben Beteira, they just disagree with the extent of the application. They agree to this Hekesh. There's a Hekesh in the Pasuk between Zivchei Avodah Zarah and Zivchei Meitim, that means that Avodah Zarah is equal to mate. That equation, even the Chachamim agree to, that it has a din like mate. The question is, how far does that go? Is that simply that it's like a mate, and therefore it's Asur B'Hana'ah? It has other implications in terms of Isur Hana'ah, all those things that are applicable to a mate. But does it also apply to Tum'at HaMate? And that's Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira's Chiddush, is that not only is it considered a mate for all the other dinim, but it's considered to be a mate, the Gabei Tum'ah. Chachamim say, yes, we agree that it has a Hekesh like a mate, but nevertheless, it's not Mitamei Bo'ohel. Those would then goes on to say, maybe even the Chachamim agree it's Mitamei Bo'ohel, and the difference between them, whether it's Mitamei Bo'ohel, Midorabanan, or Midoraita. According to the Rabbanan, it would only be Midorabanan. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, it would be even Deoraita. And he proves that from the other instances where the Gemara seems to say that even the Chachamim agree to this Hekesh between Avodah Zarah and the mate. Next Mishnah, Shochet Balayla. Someone who shechs at night, V'chein Tsumah Shechat. or a blind person who does shechita, shechita tok sheira. The shechita is okay. And the clear diok out of here, which the Gemara is going to say right away, is hashochet diavad in the chatchila lo. It's clear here that this is only something that we say bidiavad. If you already did it, it's okay. But we would not recommend doing this up front. For Yaminu, is that really true? Olam shochatim ben bayom ben balayla ben barosha gag ben barosha sfina. We have a Tosefta, Chulin, that seems to indicate just the opposite. It says you can check during the day, during the night, on the roof, or on the boat. We'll discuss the issues in a minute. Amar Papa Bishavuka Kenegdo. It's a question of this scenario. You can make night into day. When you don't have proper lighting, then night is only Bidiavad, okay? It's a Chatchila no. And that is because you can't see what you're doing. That means we don't know if he cut through both simanim clearly. We don't know if he did the shkita. It's not because he could do it by feel. He could do it by touch. But there's also a certain amount of visible verification that you need, which is that you need to see that you actually got through the robe of both simanim. You need to see that you cut in a direct line inside of the area that you're supposed to cut. And how can you rely on that shkita to eat the meat at night? So, because of that, we would say, b'diavad, it's okay, we'll assume it was done right. The chatchila, we wouldn't recommend doing such a thing. On the other hand, you can make night into day, which is when you have a huge torch over there, and you have the amount of light that you would have had during the day anyway, then shechting at night is no different than shechting during the day. Amar Rav Ashi, dekanami, you can be medayik that from the parallels that are brought in that Tosefta and in our Mishnah. Over here it says, tani hotam, over there it says, dumya diyom, says night and day. So there are the parallels between night and day. So if you make night into day, that's when it works. That's why avuka works there. Rahalcha, it's dumia de suma. It says it's night like a blind person. Shmamina, night like a blind person means that you really can't see. It's dark, and that's what the problem is over here. Now, the tail end of the Tosefta that we quoted, which is you're allowed to do a Barosha Gag, Barosha Sfina, is addressing a Mishnah that's coming up later on in the Masechta that says one is not allowed to shecht in the Yam. You're not allowed to shecht in the ocean because it looks like you're sacrificing to the Sar Shel Yam. You're also not allowed to shecht into a kli and have the blood go into a utensil because it looks like you're using that to then take the blood, the Avoda Zara. So what Rashi says over here is that the Tosefta is saying that there's certain dispensations. One of those dispensations is on a boat. When you're on a boat out at sea and you're shechting, you're allowed to shecht into the sea because everybody knows the reason you're doing that is not because you're worshiping Avodah Zarah, it's because you can't get the blood all over the boat. There's no other option here. If you want to keep the boat clean, you need to shecht over the wall of the boat. So that's Rashi says the dispensation of the Tosefta says, Afilu Barosh Spina. Tosfot disagrees and says that Gemara later on is going to qualify that and say, even in that scenario, you're not allowed to shecht directly into the sea. You have to shecht onto the wall of the boat. The blood has to roll down the wall of the boat and then fall into the sea because that's not doing it to the sea directly. In addition, he says that when you shecht on the roof, we don't consider that to be like a Avodah Zarah, like you're doing it with Tzva Shamayim to the constellations. That we don't worry about. Number two is, he says, on the roof and even on the boat, you can shecht into a kli. Because there's mukha milta, the reason you're shechting into a kli is to keep the area clean. When you do it on your roof, if you don't do that, you're going to have blood everywhere on your roof. If you shecht it on the boat and you don't have a kli there, it's going to be all over the boat. So there it's mukha that the kli is there for the cleanliness, not for the avodah zarah. So that's that little piece in the Tosefta that's saying that afilu berosh agag, afilu berosh smina is coming to give you those dispensations where there's no other alternative, and it's obvious the reason you're doing it is for cleanliness, then in that case, we don't worry about all these cheshoshot that we have in other instances, le avodah zarah. Okay, we'll stop here at the end of Yud Gimel Amud Bet.